Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Thursday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. Along with Jim Garrity of National Review, I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives today, as usual. And Jim, lost in all the coverage yesterday of avoiding the government shutdown and Russia attacking non-ISIS targets in Syria was the fact that there was another Hillary Clinton email dump courtesy of the State Department. There were thousands upon thousands of emails, so a lot of folks still sifting through the materials there, some of which needs to be redacted because it was classified. And so we don't know exactly what was in there, or sensitive information, as some have described. Other emails, as you point out in the Jolt today, we now have over 400 Hillary Clinton emails that were deemed classified right after she has stated repeatedly, first of all, that there was no classified information in there. And later on, she's changed that to the irrelevant distinction of none of it was marked classified as far as she knew. So as you point out in the Jolt today, Jim, she's left with explanations, none of which are actually very favorable towards her.
Yeah, I mean, the two I came up with is, you know, and probably most likely is that she just lied. She said, oh, there was absolutely no classified information. And in fact, you know, every couple of months, they're going to go through more emails and they're going to find more of them. They're up to 400. I suppose if you wanted to have fun, you could like start a kind of a pool, you know, what's the final number going to be? 500, 1,000, something like that. But the other one I think is a little more intriguing and certainly seems to, as a possibility, as you see these, you know, pretty comical emails. Huma, how does this thing work? I can't get, you know, in the claim that Hillary called the White House operator didn't believe she was Hillary Clinton. And I said, what is your office phone number? And she's like, I never know. I never call my own number. I'm looking at that, God, I should have put that in the weed agency. just funny examples of government looking incompetent. Is it possible Hillary really has no idea what's classified and what isn't? I mean, we look at that, we're like, oh my God, how can you not think that, you know, satellite images of North Korea or details about drone strikes, how do you not, you know, believe that that's classified? And yet, maybe she didn't, or maybe, you know, this distinction, just Hillary's mind, you know, she just can't make that distinction. It's certainly a more intriguing one that when you're the Clintons, you're so used to things not applying to you, and rules like the idea of, no, you can't repeat that, you're not allowed to use this on your own personal email system, just never crosses her mind, and that she's kind of walking around in this fog all the time. I'll let people draw the health-related conclusions from that as well. It just gets worse and worse for her, and there's just simply no way to say her initial explanation this was anything remotely close to what the facts were.
Now, I've likened the second approach that you mentioned. I've labeled that now the unfrozen caveman lawyer defense,
yes.
Both as it comes to what's classified and what's not, and her constant bewilderment at the simplest technology. For those who don't know what Unfrozen Caveman Lawyer is, it was a Saturday Night Live skit starring Phil Hartman back in the early 90s where a caveman got unfrozen after being encased in ice and he went to law school. And basically his argument during every case was, I'm a caveman and your ways frighten me. I don't understand. Are there demons in the fax machine that type this thing? And but one thing I do know is that my client is innocent and that sort of thing. Her only argument here is, I don't know how any of this works and I'm not sure what was classified. It might keep her away from prosecution, but it's a horrible argument for why she should be president.
Well, I mean, to apply the unfrozen caveman lawyer, which is, you know, you could argue kind of got rebooted by Geico.
Yes.
So easy, even a caveman can do it. It's like, I am a simple cavewoman / stroke victim who doesn't know what's going on around me. And I'm confused by technology and can't understand how to do basic tasks and am absolutely helpless without my staff. Naturally, I should be commander in chief during a dangerous time. And I do know I did nothing wrong. At some point, there's a good sketch waiting to be made of, you know, even though Phil Hartman is no longer with us, of the unfrozen caveman, Hillary Clinton, spin doctor.
All right. On to the bad martini now. And as bad as things are going for Hillary Clinton, she got thrown a very unfortunate lifeline by House Majority Leader Kevin McCarthy, the man who is at the moment considered likely to be the next Speaker of the House. Leadership elections 1 week from today. On Tuesday night, he was a guest on Hannity on the Fox News Channel, and he was trying to explain how House Republicans have actually accomplished quite a few things in recent years, including since he's become Majority Leader. And here was the very curious example that he used to explain that.
What you're going to see is a conservative speaker that takes a conservative Congress, that puts a strategy to fight and win. And let me give you one example. Everybody thought Hillary Clinton was unbeatable, right? But we put together a Benghazi special committee, a select committee. What are her numbers today? Her numbers are dropping. Why? Because she's untrustable. But no one would have known any of that had happened had we not
fought and
made that happen.
I agree. That's something good. I give you credit for that.
And here was Hillary Clinton responding to that with Al Sharpton on MSNBC.
When I hear a statement like that, which demonstrates unequivocally that this was always meant to be a partisan political exercise, I feel like it does a grave disservice and dishonors not just the memory of the four that we lost, but of everybody who has served our country.
Jim, the obvious and legitimate reasons for this committee are many. The refused request for more security, the lack of any effort to help once the attack had started, the lie about the YouTube video, and now Hillary Clinton gets to look like a victim because Kevin McCarthy has no idea what he's talking about.
I got to go back and check to see how McCarthy felt, but remember, it was a long time pulling teeth to get Boehner to sign off on the idea of a special committee.
Right.
There were five different congressional committees that were investigating Benghazi, and for a long time he said, no, they're doing a fine job. I don't want to take away their work and put together on a special committee. The second thing is, the purpose of it is not to take down Hillary Clinton's poll numbers. At least it's not supposed to be. We're pretty convinced the Obama administration lied to the country. They were caught spectacularly flat-footed and inexcusably unprepared for the threat that was gathering, growing, and increasingly obvious in Benghazi. They ignored Stevens' request for additional security. They ignored his warnings. And then the worst-case scenario occurred. The night of it occurred, there was nothing in place. They had no preparations to get their people out of there. And then afterwards, they lied to the American public about it because they were 2 months away from a presidential election. They decided to blame it on a YouTube tape. From the way McCarthy talks about it, it almost sounds like he's angrier about Hillary's poll numbers than about this stuff. And, you know, this is the guy who's going to be the next Speaker of the House. Now, I've had a lot of beefs with some of the, you know, House conservatives and grassroots conservatives who don't like, you know, I think kind of, you know, blamed Boehner for some things that were kind of structural and are now every bit as unexcited about McCarthy. Well, after this, it's very hard to be excited about McCarthy because his first big moment in the spotlight, and he just steps on a rake and just, you know, face plants it. There are other less clean analogies I can make here. Is my option Daniel Webster? Webster, give it a shot. Can you talk about this without giving Hillary Clinton a giant talking point? Because now Hillary Clinton's saying this whole thing is a partisan witch hunt, which McCarthy's comment makes it sound like. And then the next thing is that, you know, she's supposed to appear before the committee in a couple of weeks. I wonder if she's going to skip out on it. She can point to this, right? I mean, so in his very first appearance, his first week of being in the public spotlight in the face of House Republicans, Kevin McCarthy really stepped in it. And I don't know how he gets himself out of this. And while you don't want to judge a man by one statement, this is pretty damaging and extraordinarily frustrating.
And self-inflicted. He brought up the example. It wasn't even as though he was specifically asked about it. So two other quick notes on that. First of all, Jason Chaffetz, who has done a lot of research and work on this, given his role in the Oversight Committee, absolutely repudiated what McCarthy had to say. And Trey Gowdy, who was our crazy martini yesterday because he is everywhere and everyone wants him to do every job, saying that he has every intention of running for re-election in 2016. So that little nugget dropped on C-SPAN yesterday by one of his colleagues looks to not be true. So on to the crazy martini now. And Jim, this will give you fuzzy flashbacks to the Kerry spot back from your days covering that campaign in 2004. The new movie, Truth, which is a funny name for the movie of Dan Rather and Mary Mapes and the whole Texas National Guard document scandal from the 2004 presidential campaign. And the way that this movie goes forward, according to the New York Post, Truth makes it appear that the document's contents were verified by a senior officer in Bush's unit. Mapes is seen reading the documents over the phone to him, and this guy, General Hodges, agrees that they accurately reflected the mindset of Bush's late commander, Lieutenant Colonel Jerry Killian, whose signature is on the documents. And for those who don't remember, these documents were found out to be forgeries thanks to folks who realized that the font used in them didn't exist back in the early 1970s when they were purported to have been written. So, Jim, we've covered this ground a lot, and it's amazing that over a decade later, Dan Rather and his crew still can't admit what's pretty clear.
Couple of points in this movie. As I mentioned, this is the second straight movie where Robert Redford is playing a person who is secretly a member of Hydra, the evil terror organization, in playing Dan Rather. We kind of knew from the beginning, like of all the stories you could tell about this, which is an extraordinary story, right? I mean, here is network news putting out something that is flat out not true. And then when it, you know, when people say, oh, there's no truth, then, no, you have to prove that it's not true. And of course, as you pointed out, you can't create 2004 style Microsoft Word documents on 1960 some word processing and typewriting machines. And it led to the end of Dan Rather. And so what's fascinating is they went with Mary Mapes' book, and they ended up with a story that basically, they're calling it truth or proof or whatever it is, and it flips everything on its head, in which, you know, Rather and Mapes are these crusading journalists, the Woodward and Bernstein, and there's this nefarious conspiracy against them, and the nefarious conspiracy works. And the only good news about this movie, Greg, is that all of the bloggers, the Pajama Hadeen, of which I was one back in those, you know, old days in 2004, I had heard the early casting was I was going to be played by Jar Jar Binks. And all the bloggers, the Pajama Hadeen, these guys, we played by the Gungans from Star Wars. And really not a positive portrayal. Actually, what's really interesting is it sounds like they're telling the entire story without any references to the bloggers. which I mean, don't you look at that kind of like here we have one of the great, you know, underdog little guy takes on the big guy, you know, fighting City Hall, all that kind of stuff. The major multimillionaire network news anchor is the plucky hero. Everything is backwards. So if you're really frustrated with a Hollywood heavy-handed propaganda technique used against a cause you believe in and demonizing you, the little guy, if you want to know what the other side feels like all the time, I would urge you to go out and rent or get on Netflix or DVD this 2012 movie called Won't Back Down, about two determined mothers, one a teacher, looking to transform their children's failing inner-city school. Stars Maggie Gyllenhaal and Viola Davis. I really agree with school choice. I really agree with vouchers. I really agree that teachers' unions are obstacles to reform and improvement and generally protect the worst of the teaching profession. Greg, this is the most heavy-handed film I've ever seen. In which they, first of all, like the head of the teachers' union, he might as well start tying the kids to the railroad tracks. Rolling his mustache. I mean, he quotes like one of the top, the early teachers union founders, and he says, "When will I start standing up for the kids? When they start paying union dues." And here's like, I totally agree with this movie. And I was like, oh my God, this is what liberals feel like all the time. Because the movie is making everybody they disagree with just look like the most horrible person in the world. And the people who they like, the mom who wants to help her, who works two jobs and is a single mom and is struggling and just wants her kid to get a good education, and full of these heart-wrenching, isn't it about the kids? Don't we want what's bad? You know, like, it's really enjoyable, but it's so spectacularly heavy-handed. And the fascinating thing is, like, all these Hollywood people acted like they didn't seem to realize they were making a movie that a lot of conservatives would agree with and that was going to antagonize big democratic institutions. They really saw it as this plucky underdog takes on the system. Only now are liberals realizing that they are the system. They're so used to seeing themselves as the plucky outsider underdog. So anyway, so that's going to be like kind of the palate cleanser if you end up going to see Leatherface Robert Redford playing Dan Rather and attempting to, you know, show about how he tried to save the Republic from terrible George W. Bush and those nasty bloggers.
Amazing. I love the line, Robert Redford, who makes no effort whatsoever to look or sound like Dan Rather.
I applaud them for that. Like, that's a certain honesty there. Like, I'm not even going to try. The second thing is that, you know, I'm one of the few people who didn't hate everything about the disputed Indiana Jones movie, shall we say.
Ooh.
I know, Greg, but I think would you concur with me that Cate Blanchett was not what was wrong with that movie?
She certainly wasn't the weak link, no.
Okay. But now she's really playing somebody who's a villainous. I mean, somebody we really should be afraid of. I have a crazy danger answer. Welcome to Jim and Greg's Movie Talk.
Oh, very good. Yeah, well, just get your popcorn ready. We'll be ready at the movies this coming Friday. Jim, have a great day. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And tune in again on Friday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.